Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Hey guys, this is Brett King and I'm at London Soberst this week delivering you Breaking Banks, the number one global podcast and radio show in the world with 6.5 million listeners in 180 countries. This week is a huge fintech week. Over 11,000 people here for Soberst in London. They've been running this for 30 years, but it's innovation, AI, data. That's all the topic. And of course, happening in New York right now is Finovate. And they've apparently had their biggest event as well. We're going to hear from Brad Limer and Theo Lau a little bit more on what happened at Finovate this week. But before we get to that, let's start off with some of the hot news from Soberst in a Tribe and the Swift conference out at London this week.
So Currency Cloud, of course, was one of the early, fintechs in the UK. A global fintech. But you guys are based here, right?
Yeah, we're based here. We've got office in New York. We're in Amsterdam now, which is very exciting.
Right. So you started here, right?
We started here in London, right. Yeah.
And so the fintech landscape in London has certainly changed a lot because you've been at this for 7 years, am I right?
7 years, yeah. Good knowledge.
Yeah. There you go.
Done your research.
Well, I know the team, right? So, in that time, I mean, how long have you been with Currency Cloud yourself?
Almost from the beginning. I was there 2013, 6 years ago.
Right. So how has the London fintech scene changed since you guys started out? Because back in those days, it was not the Wild Wild West, but it was certainly, you were very early in the cycle for fintech in London, at least.
So one of my favorite quotes was from a customer one day, and yeah, long-time customer. It's kind of like 3 years in, and he described us as being like two drunks walking up the road together, holding each other up. And that's kind of like, you know, early days, it felt a bit like that. You know, we're figuring it out. We're trying to make, you know, it was messy. There was always something. Yeah. The difference is growing up.
That
right?
Sounds like Alex Sion and I with Moving.
Yeah. So, no, look, it's grown up. I think the Money 2020, less here, but Money 2020 is a great kind of encapsulation of the industry.
We're at Soberst.
So, there you go. I know we're at Soberst. But you're talking about fintech, right? So, fintech is not here. But if you go back, actually, the fact is here is interesting. If you go back 5 years ago, it was a tiny stand at Money 2020. Everyone would have like their little like quarter thing. And yeah. it was small. It was tiny. It was hundreds of people all doing basically some variation of the same thing. And you look at it now, people are mature. People are scaled up. People are running real businesses at scale. And kind of the promise is coming to fruition. What's interesting is when you come here, first of all, there are loads of fintechs here nowadays. And they're selling into big banks, and big banks take them seriously. And I think what you're starting to see is, you used to hear it from the banks, they say like, oh, whatever, like these guys are all tiny. They're never going to take our market. They're just, you know, they're like less than 1%. What do they know? And now it's like 5%, 6%, 7%, 8%. And they're like, oh shit, I need to pay attention. Yeah, and they're paying attention. And what they're doing is they're coming to fintech companies and saying, okay, how can you help me? As a provider of services to fintechs, we find ourselves in a lucky position where banks are now saying, okay, we see what you did for the challenger banks. Can you help us do something similar?
Well, of course, you know, there's news about Monzo hitting 3 million.
Yeah.
So basically 1 in 20 Britons now have a Monzo account. But then you've got the likes of WeBank in China with 180 million customers.
I mean, it's a different scale,
isn't it? As a challenger bank.
Yeah.
But then in the US, you've got and similar figures in China, actually, where unsecured lending, like 40% of that is now fintech in those markets. And so there's no way you can say that fintech isn't having an impact anymore. And yet that was the argument for many years.
Oh,
so
sure.
How do you think it's put pressure back on the incumbents in this market?
So, do you know what? It's actually really regional. I think your point about China is accurate. You know, it's very concentrated in China. is the other thing, you know, plus Paytm, you know, a few markets, but kind of it's very concentrated. So let's start with the US, where fintech, unless you're at scale, and there are certain parts of the, you know, the e-commerce space, fintech has been really successful. Outside of the e-commerce space, you know, it's still dominated by 6,000 traditional credit unions and banks for everything. Yeah. You know, whether it's lending or payments or cross-border or whatever. Like, you know, so the US is still very bank-dominated. You know, having to get licensed in 50 states or you've got to become an agent of a bank is a massive impediment to real fintech, I think, becoming successful there.
All right. So give us an update on Currency Cloud, what you guys are working on and what's some of your big achievements over the last couple of years since we spoke to you last.
So a couple of things. We just signed a massive partnership with Visa, which we're really excited about. We announced it in June. And what Visa are doing is using our technology to, when you use your card abroad, to get a real-time rate. What that means to the traveler is when you spend overseas, you get an automatic update to your balance in the local currency. You take away all the complexity of cross-border payments from your card. So that's really exciting for us. We think it's going to be massive. And we've got the first issuing banks coming to the platform already and starting to use that product. So that's really exciting.
That's a pretty big deal, man.
It's a big deal. Yeah. We've got to deliver on it now. which I'm utterly confident
in. Acquiring you, right?
Well, I think there's a long way between now and anything like that. So, and then the second thing is cross borders reversing. It's always been about how do you send money to somebody. You know, I've got a bill to pay in Hong Kong. I'm going to send Hong Kong dollars out.
Now request to pay is
exactly. Yeah, yeah. Now you're saying I'm a Hong Kong company and my customer is in the US. I want to charge them and bill them in US dollars, and I want they could send a Fedwire to me, or even better, an ACH payment, and have it be almost free for them. And we're seeing that reversal of trends. So the collections world is really big for us at the moment. We're going to think it's going to become much bigger.
Really, very cool. And so, what's the size of your team now, roughly?
So we're 230 people at the moment.
We just won
a grant.
Man.
So after the financial crash, RBS, a big British bank, got penalised, and one of the penalties was to give money to fintech insurgents.
They were supposed to spin off Williams and Glynn, and that.
That's right, and they couldn't do it.
So then they had to put cash into the fintechs.
So we were a lucky recipient of another £10 million grant, which is another 50 people we're going to be hiring over the next few months. So that's super exciting investment, and I think that'll just make everything go a little bit faster.
So where do you see Currency Cloud in 3 years' time?
I don't think we're going to do anything differently to what we do today, but we're going to be bigger, we're going to do it better, we're going to do it faster. We just want to be the people who nail cross-border. We're not going to get distracted, we're just going to focus on it, and we're going to be the best.
Yeah. Well, so where can people come and find out more about what you guys are doing right now?
So we've got a booth here at Cyboss. I can't remember the number because I'm not a details person.
Yeah,
but look us up on the map. If not, give me a shout. Todd Latham at Currency Cloud.
Fantastic.
Thanks, Brett.
Todd, thanks for coming back on Breaking Banks and giving us an update.
Thanks for having me. Cheers.
Cheers. So we are at Cyboss and Megan Kaywood has wandered. Is that how I pronounce it?
Yeah,
has wandered into the studios. So, of course, Megan, the last time we had you on the show was in your previous incarnation of Starling.
Yep.
And now you're heading up over at Barclays. What's technically your role there?
So I'm a managing director that's overseeing digital strategy, so our head of digital strategy.
So that's a big term.
Mm-hmm.
It's like sort of a... It's one step down, I guess, from like a chief digital officer.
Yeah.
But strategically, it's pretty important role.
Absolutely. Yeah, it would be very similar if you're familiar with those roles at other companies. That's
right.
Yeah, in line with
so,
that.
First of all, what's it like going from a fintech to an incumbent?
Mm-hmm. Well, so with my interest in it, it's very much that I see banking as being at an inflection point where technology is very much shaping not only what we do, but how we do it. We're moving from offering products to offering very connected, seamless end-to-end journeys, increasing the way that we partner with fintechs in the ecosystem and what it looks like to really focus on the customer rather than focusing on, you know, previously our goals as a bank or for banks previously was very much on kind of our own incentives around revenue and costs and the like, but really shifting that mindset to instead focus on customers. So I was very interested in making that transition, but obviously moving from a challenger bank, you know, it's quite small but growing, you have advantages around being greenfield, right? You get to define the box you operate in from a process perspective, from a governance perspective, from a technology perspective. You have all the advantages of getting to build what you build best in class today.
Right. You don't have those constraints with legacy policy, process, systems, people.
But at Barclays, on the other hand, you have the shrinks of scale. You have a massive amount of customers. You have brand awareness. There's still a certain amount of trust that comes with being a bank in terms of people trusting you with their money. And so we have a different set of advantages. But on the other hand, we're also 330 years old. And the challenges there are you not only have historical or legacy systems, but also the processes that end up wrapping around it. So the thing that I find hugely exciting is trying to bridge the best of both of these worlds to bring in the best of tech and culture into a very established organization at scale.
Yeah. Very cool. Mm-hmm. And so in terms of like the digital strategy piece, obviously in the UK, there's a lot of competitive pressure coming from the new fintechs, but there's also some fintechs like Starling that are more cooperative with banks and so forth. So how do you see your role to bridge those two worlds, given that you've lived in both of those worlds?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one of the reasons why I actually joined Barclays is because they were already very much an advocate of this new way of working in the ecosystem with fintechs. The precedent for banking here was the open banking APIs. So it was effectively saying that banks no longer own customers' data. They actually have to help customers share it securely via these APIs should they choose to do so. And it was supposed to create a level playing field with fintechs. And on the one hand, many incumbents at that time saw it as a very onerous compliance exercise and something that was threatening. Because all of a sudden,
just a cost.
Yeah, and well, because the reality is a lot of these fintechs start up and they'll focus on doing the higher profit financial products, the kind of interesting bits around, you know, payments or mortgages, et cetera, et cetera. So if banks no longer have the kind of ability to have the business model they used to with kind of having all of those full products with their customers, it's just a very different way of working. The thing that I find very exciting about that from my perspective is that APIs enable this new type of connectivity, enables customers to have awareness of their options to easily know what their options are and switch to them. And the thing that I really appreciate about Barclays is very much leaning into that, not only from a technology perspective, you know, but a business model perspective as well, understanding that this is the new way we can best serve customers.
So are you guys actively pursuing fintech partnerships?
The first thing Barclays actually did, which was launched in November of last year, was to be the first bank to enable you to integrate all of your accounts into Barclays. So even if you had a Lloyds account, RBS account, one of your other bank accounts, you could pull that in. So step one was trying to do basic changes that would enable Barclays to move from something closed to something open. Now that's also widening up to include fintech partnerships. So one of the first ones that I think became quite exciting here in the UK was when Flux came out.
Right.
So it was kind of one of the first open banking manifestations, taking transaction APIs, doing something interesting to not only give receipts in the transaction in the bank, but then also to give automated loyalty and rewards. Barclays being one of the first to also not only have them on Barclays Launchpad and Techstars, but incorporating them into the bank as well.
Yeah, we've had Bink on the show before, which is another UK-born.
Yeah, and then we invested in Bink this year as well. So we put, I believe it was a $10 million investment with them.
Awesome.
We're doing
fantastic.
A partnership with them. But it's very much saying, you know, some of these fintechs, they just have different advantages. They're really focusing on different customer problems. We have certain things that we do really well, but fintechs can very much complement that. So to bring the kind of fullness of what's possible for customers, it means that now we do need to work with people like Bink and Flux to enable that to be brought into the app to give them the kind of best possible financial experience.
Now, the other thing that you must find a challenge is, you know, when you're working with Ann Bowden, for example, at Starling, you can just walk in and say hello to Ann and you guys can just nut out strategy, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you've got to get all these different stakeholders involved and get the buy-in for that, what's your process internally at Barclays for getting broader involvement in the whole digital scheme?
Well, to some extent, that can still happen. But the reality is being a large, complex bank, it means that we have certain compliance and regulation and governance that we have to go through. With the way the bank is structured, with 80,000 employees, there's just a lot more people involved.
Right.
And so that means that all of a sudden one decision can take significantly longer than it would be, for example, at a new company or, you know, somewhere like Starling, given the kind of processes we have that we have to do just to fulfill our banking license. One of the key things I'm actually focused on is how do you still maintain that kind of regulatory imperative, but also enable empowered decision-making throughout the company? How do you enable small cross-functional teams to be able to make decisions quickly? without having to go through unnecessary hoops and barriers and processes and bureaucracy in order to get anything done. Because the reality is, if you're taking months just to make a decision, and then if, you know, by technology, if you're also not as fast on that side as well, you're just going to end up being left behind. And I think it can become disincentivizing for teams if you have all of these different steps that they have to go through, that the processes can become quite arduous. So I think one of the key things that is important in banking at Barclays is that in order to be moving to a digital bank and to really be moving to digital, it's your organizational structure, it's your processes, it's your incentive structures, it's your teams, how you enable people to make decisions quickly and kind of give that delegated authority.
So it's a bigger problem than you, but you're a key stakeholder. So do you find yourself acting as sort of an internal champion of digital for Barclays?
Absolutely. I think part of my role very much is to evangelize the different ways that we can work together, the new ways of working that come with a modern design approach. And I think really in the best companies, one of the things that, you know, a startup is there's only so many people. So there's only so many decision makers at the table by virtue of being smaller. But in a large company, there are so many things that you're working on, so many things that you're doing. And in order to really have the kind of culture that you want, you have to let people own it. So actually the importance of not just, you know, having a command come from on high, like a dictatorship, like the CEO says, we'll do this.
Yeah, but getting really people important. Excited about it.
Yeah, exactly.
But do you, that's what I mean. Like, do you find yourself, like internally being used as that catalyst for getting people involved?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a whole, a whole bunch of people, I would say, that are working on this at Barclays as well around, you know, how do we create these cross-functional teams? How do we empower
just
individuals?
I saw Drew this morning, and you work with Drew, of course. You've got quite a team. Mm-hmm. And Barclays has always been quite passionate about stuff like, contactless and leading the way on a number of these elements. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Barclays has actually been quite a pioneer, I would say, even in, you know, technology and banking over the years, you know, over its few hundred years of existence, like inventing the ATM, being the first to introduce the credit card in the UK. There's a number of things I think they were really first movers on. I think that now, even so, the Barclays app is very well respected and has often been on, you know, the top of various lists around what best in class looks like in banking and mobile applications. So I think it's been something that's very core to Barclays, and I think my joining Barclays is more of an indicator that they are already very much appreciating
for
digital
the right skills.
And bringing people like me and Drew and others on.
So, what are you working on at the moment that's interesting that you could tell us about?
There's a myriad of different things. I think the kind of three different things. The kind of three different sides that would be interesting to talk about are, one, everything that we've just talked about with organizational structure and enabling these high-performing, cross-functional, empowered teams to move quickly and make decisions. And what does that look like? And what fundamental decisions and processes do we need to change to enable it? The other is the technology side. How do we continue to evolve that to stay best in class? Banks being older, obviously, they don't have the advantage of being able to build from scratch in the same way. They have certain processes and systems already in place. So really thinking through how we continue to stay at pace and stay best in class from a technology perspective. And then, of course, thinking from two other sides, I would say, is one is fintech partnerships, open APIs, how we enable connectivity in the ecosystem, and how we continue to do that globally.
Great. Well, Megan, thanks for stopping by Breaking Banks and giving us some more of your time. And we want to stay tuned and hear a bit more about what's happening at Barclays. But thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thank you for having me.
So in addition to Cybose, which we're coming to you from live in London this week, there's also been another huge fintech show this week happening in New York. It's Finovate Fall. And two of our regular guest hosts and regulars on the show been out there, and that's Brad Limer and Theo Lau. So, Brad, maybe if you start and tell us, you sat through most of the demos. Who won Best of Show, and what did you personally think was the highlights of Finovate?
Yeah, no, thanks for having us on, Brett. There were 9 winners in Finovate Fall in New York this time in New York, and it was a lot of really great sort of business-to-business applications that we saw. So the first up was Blitzpay, which is really a financial inclusion application that is revolved around payments. So they want to include as many people in sort of the payment infrastructure as they can. They say that they can do digital and physical payments, and it's all via text. So again, business-to-business applications between consumers and merchants and from consumers to one another. The second winner was College Aid Pro. This is a college lending platform with the help of financial advisors and different digital tools that help you optimize the cost of college and the expense of college. And again, this can go through business to business, whether it be a bank or whether it be an employer, but it's all geared around finding the best deal around paying for finances around college. Next up was Cinchi, data collaboration platform for the enterprise. They take in a lot of different types of data from a lot of different sources. They're Toronto-based, which was kind of interesting. Again, business-to-business platform, but they had a great visualization engine. Next winner was eBankit. eBankit is an open banking platform that is designed for banks to really center their experiences around any type of partnerships they want to put into a single platform. London-based, again, business-to-business, much of the winners were sort of B2B-focused, which I thought was kind of interesting. Next up is a company called Glia, and you may remember this name because they've actually won Finovate before.
How's the that company spelled?
Glia is G-L-I-A. They were okay. Former SailMove. SailMove was a company that years ago at Bank Innovation, they actually won another award for helping businesses find their customers. But they're a digital communication platform that takes, again, data around businesses finding consumers in different markets, and they let them connect to their customers using digital messaging, video, and it's all sort of AI-based. And this is a company based here in New York. The next winner was MX. Now, this is MX's seventh win. This is the first time.
Yeah, seven times.
Imagine. So they didn't have Matt West or they didn't have Ryan Calderon.
They didn't have his hands?
No, they didn't have Matt West's hands. This was Brandon DeWitt. And, you know, Brandon has had 3.5 years of battling stage 4 cancer and successfully beating it with a team of people from Ryan on down. And what was, I think, most compelling about his pitch was they talked about the financial feed and this data service aggregation that they're doing for more fintech players in the space. They want to be sort of the glue that brings in a lot of these players together. And he said they're putting the same type of energy into creating this platform as they did fighting his cancer. So, again, sort of moving story from stage. Rolling through the next three to wrap this up. Al, O-W-L. So if you want to go check it out, it's al.co. They're a fraud protection platform, personalized sort of auto onboarding experience. They have KYC tools, fraud detection, and they're also Vancouver-based, so second Canadian company to win. Final two, Pinkaloo. Pinkaloo is a Baltimore, Maryland-based company that offers up modernized charitable giving. You could donate to any charity. You could manage the taxes around it. Again, B2B focused, but it goes through workplaces and employers. And they came out of FinTech Sandbox and Mass Challenge. So I thought that was kind of interesting as well. And finally, we have Zogo Finance. It's a white label financial education product, providing a whole bunch of different literacy tools. The founder was in high school. Senior in high school 3 years ago, came to this country at 14, recognized that there was not enough financial education. Again, this is geared toward banks, and it's a Durham, North Carolina-based company, and it came out of TechStars. So, you know, really fantastic stories this time at Finovate.
Fantastic summary, Brad. Really comprehensive. So I appreciate that, and great to see MX back in the on the winner's circle with a really inspiring story. So Theo, what did you take away from this? I understand it was the largest Finovate in their history. So they've been running for 11 years now, right?
Yeah, actually, it's the turnout was quite impressive, and frankly, caught me by surprise a little bit. Based on, you know, what we've been seeing trending in a lot of the fintech shows for the last year and two, because, you know, there's just way too many of them, right? And plus with Cybos going on and Insurance Tech Connect going on in Vegas, I think there's another banking show in Chicago where our friend Dan Latimer is. I was a little worried that we won't have as many people coming in, but surprisingly, it was a really, really good turnout. A couple of interesting things, as Brad has noted, a lot of the winners and even the companies that are demoing their B2B focused. There is a lot of talk about AI. Practically almost every other company says they're using AI of some sort. A lot of focus on wealth management as well. There are no lack of wealth management companies. There is even a little bit more conversation around how do we do better financial planning for older adults, which was interesting. The disappointing thing is that I am not seeing too much of, shall we say, imagination in serving that particular demographics, right? Because people are typically thinking about retirement. That's what they need. But if we have looked at some of the past Finovate winners and you know, demo companies, if you will, you looked at last year's Best of Show winner, Golden, which we've been working with, or the other year we have Eversafe. So those are different aspects of the demographics, as you will know, that I'm interested in. And I don't really see much of that. Another trend, I would say, is gig economy focus, as Jacob Yeager, who, by the way, happy birthday, it's his birthday today, and
yes,
he also
right.
got promoted to be president of Javelin Technologies, so happy birthday, my friend. But as he talked about in the last Finovate analyst panel, he said, you know, we need more companies focusing on gig economies. And so sure enough, we see a little bit more focus on that based on, you know, how do we help gig workers with their day-to-day finances, as well as how do we help integrate that in the employer aspects. So those are some of the few highlights.
That's an excellent summary. Well, thank you guys for reaching out to us while we're across the pond here and giving us that excellent summary. And just quickly, where can people find your latest podcast?
Yes, you can find us. Search on Rhetoric, and you will be able to see the series that we have on blockchain, on Shades of Grey, which is longevity, and also on books. We have a series on books, Judge Me by My Cover, and the latest, Red Envelope. So it's spelled as Rhetoric, R-H-E-T-O-R-I-Q.
Thank Fantastic. Thanks, Brad. Thanks, Thea. We'll see you guys backstage side.
Yes, we will.
Thanks, mate.
So let's take a quick break. You're listening to Breaking Banks. We'll be right back after these words from our sponsors.
All of the software as a service tools available make life so much easier. But do you ever find yourself frustrated at just how much time you spend getting information in and out of one application, into another one, and you're wasting hours every day moving data from emails to spreadsheets to the CRM and back out again? It's the kind of stuff you just expected to happen without lifting a finger. Well, Zapier can help. Fintech Forge and at Breaking Banks, we move a lot of data around, and Zapier is the easiest way we've found to automate the work we do. It connects all of our business software and handles the work for us so we can focus on the things that matter most, like producing content like this. So no more wasting your time on tasks that you know could be automated, because that's exactly what Zapier was built to do. Just go to our special link, Zapier, Zapier.com/fintech, and connect the apps you use most and let Zapier take it from there. Zapier lets you instantly engage with leads, send them to a CRM or a spreadsheet. Anything you can imagine, Zapier can help you automate. Right now, through November, try Zapier for free by going to our special link, Zapier.com/fintech. That's Zapier.com/fintech. If you're still using one of the big wireless providers in 2019, you need to stop and ask yourself, what are you really paying for? Between the expensive retail stores, inflated prices, and hidden fees, you're being taken advantage of because they know you will pay, because you're addicted to that phone just like I am. Enter Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile provides the same premium network coverage that you're used to, in fact dependent on, but at a fraction of the cost because everything is online. Mint Mobile saves on retail locations and overhead, then passes on those savings directly to you. Now, at first, I was a little bit skeptical. I thought, you know, am I really going to get the same coverage? I travel all over the country and we're speaking and working with banks. And sure enough, Mint Mobile has been so easy to use. I have at least as good of coverage as I ever did with my previous provider. And it cut my bill down by an order of magnitude. Mint Mobile makes it easy to cut your wireless bill down to just $15 a month. Every plan comes with unlimited nationwide talk and text. With Mint Mobile, stop paying for unlimited data you'll never use. Choose between plans with 3, 8, or 12 gigabits of 4G LTE data. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and keep your same phone number along with your existing contacts. Ditch your old wireless bill and start saving with Mint Mobile. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/fintech. That's mintmobile.com/fintech and cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/fintech. We talk a lot about privacy and data security on this podcast, probably more than any other podcast out there, which is why we're so excited that privacy.com is one of our sponsors. Talk about a cool fintech application. They help you maintain your data privacy when shopping online by creating virtual cards that are tied to a specific merchant. In fact, you get an instant notice if a hacker who somehow has gotten access to your information is trying to use it elsewhere. You can even set up spending limits attached to it. And one of the things I like best, you can also use it to make sure that anything you don't want to have an ongoing subscription to that auto renews, if you use that virtual card and set a limit attached to it, you're going to make sure that it does not run over and end up with all of those gray charges. Really excited about the level of security it provides, and it really helps you save time and effort. Instead of having to go through any time your information is compromised and reload it, you've got it all set up right at the touch of your fingertips. They also have an awesome Chrome extension that I find super easy to help you fill out your card information in the blink of an eye. Check out privacy.com. Excited to have them as a sponsor when we talk about all things fintech and controlling access to your data. Privacy.com.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag #BreakingBanks. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. I'm your host, Brett King. We were out at London this week for the biggest Sibos conference in their 30-year history. Find out more of what went on right now.
So we're here with Liz Lumley. Now, Liz, you've been on our show dozens of times,
yes,
I'd say,
I've
right?
I've hosted.
Yes, you have. Exactly, exactly. Of course, you know, you're a mainstay in the UK fintech space because you've been in it from the early days, from the start.
From the very start.
Like myself, although not UK-based.
Remember when it was just a few of us?
It was. It was like we knew everybody, right? Yeah, and so you think back to like 2009, 2010, when we were, you know, the early guys online. Of course, you were at FinExtra at the time.
Yeah.
I was doing Bank 2.0 back in those days. Boy, it's a long. It's like 10 years ago now, right?
Well, I always say whenever I give talks that I've been in fintech for 25 years.
Yeah.
So you know, I always take a big tent approach to fintech.
Right.
I don't think fintech started 10 years ago.
No.
I think it started 300 years ago.
No, I think. Well, you could argue PayPal was the first, like.
Yeah, the new wave.
Yeah, because it was online, digital, and so that was 94, was it?
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
XCOM. But then the term fintech really didn't start getting popularized till about 2009, 2010.
Well, actually, Peter Ritter did a newsletter in the Sunday Times in London in 1985 called Fintech.
Really?
Yeah, and so
that
he was
know.
One of the investors in Waters Information Services.
How did I not know that?
Well, let me tell you this. So I started off writing about real-time market data on trading floors and trading infrastructures at Waters in the early 90s. And the Ritter family were one of the investors in Waters. And our British editors always called it fintech in the office. So a lot of people today kind of think that the term fintech first appeared in American Banker magazine in around 2000.
Right.
Now, the guy that hired me right out of university, David Longobardi, left to become editorial director of Source Media, which publishes American Banker. So he took the term fintech.
He took it with him.
Yeah. I'm a source of all knowledge.
This is great. Well, you're in the journalism circles as well. You know, I mean, I pretend to be a journalist with the podcast.
We're all journalists now. Yeah, we all have a phone.
Citizen journalists or whatever those they say. Mm. Now, of course, you've moved on from those days. You've done a bunch of stuff in the space. Right now, you're working with the FinTech Talents team.
Yes, yeah.
So tell us about this year's conference coming up.
So, November 11th, 12th, and 13th at Printworks, FinTech Talents. Yep. So a bunch of us came together last year, Lisa Moyle, Victor Cruz, they both came from Finovate.
Yep.
I was in the industry, and we all sort of had a drunken afternoon at Money 2020 in Amsterdam last year, and they were telling me about
this
company.
I'm not going to touch the drunken afternoon bit.
But they were telling me they'd started this company that was going to do events and content platforms, and their vision very much aligned with mine, that we kind of think the event model is broken.
Yes.
Very much. So I've put together, so FinTech Talents this year is going to be the 15th large-scale event that I've put together. And I always tell people I hate large events. I like sitting around a table and having a discussion. Yeah. So what we've done this year is we're trying to create, I mean, it's called a festival. It is a festival. We have live music. We have craft beer. But we want to have an intimate experience in a big 3-day tech festival world. So where all the breakout sessions will be discussion rooms where the speakers sit in with the audience. So there's a lot more interaction, a lot more engagement. Yep. And even for our partners that have exhibiting stands on our floor, we don't leave them to the whims of footfall. They all get community managers. They all see who has delegate passes. They can say, can you help us set up these meetings? And we help facilitate that for you. And it's a year.
It sounds a little bit more like Slush or the early days of South by Southwest.
Yeah, the early days.
Yeah, because South by sort of
jumped the shark, as they say. It's all corporate now, I know. But that's exactly what it is. I mean, I've said this before, and I don't want to disparage, you know, we're sitting here at Cybos, but Cybos is a membership, you know, it's been going on for a while. But
they've
got a
captive audience.
They have a captive
audience.
Yeah. But a lot of events, I kind of think, are taking the piss. It's a lie. You know, they put names up on the stage. People never meet them, never see them. And it's kind of like they're selling a con.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry. I haven't quite lost my youthful sort of naivety. Like, I'm hoping that we can make things better.
Yep.
And I don't want to be all cynical and be like, oh, that's the way it's always been done. It's always been a con.
Right.
No, I'm sorry. I always want to change things and make things better.
Well, good.
Sorry. Good. So anyway, Printworks.
Now, we were having a conversation before about conversations in the fintech space. And that there's some stuff that where we've moved on. Mm-hmm. For example, real-time payments is a good example where, you know, in the past there was debates about this, particularly in the US, you know. But finally, thankfully, I think we're over that one.
Yeah.
But there's also still a bunch of, you know, there's still, for example, despite the fact that Monzo now has 1 in 20 Britons on their, you know, on their books, and you've got Revolut and N26 and these other guys making big, big moves, you know, there's still some that are going, I'm not sure the challenger banks are really going to take market share away from incumbents, you know. So there are examples of conversations where people are sort of still debating the obvious or haven't moved on from some of these issues.
Yeah.
What are some of your pet peeves in that space?
Well, one of my pet peeves, a lot of it comes from when I was managing director of Startup Bootcamp FinTech. And there's a lot of talk at shows like this about banks get on stage and say, we have to collaborate with the new fintechs.
Right.
We're going to partner. We've got a framework.
That'd be great if they could.
Yeah, and I'm sitting there in the audience thinking, you know what, I have to be blunt, you're lying.
Yeah.
Banks are
you're
not
structurally set up for it.
They're not structurally set up for it. As much as there might be...
You don't have a partnership department.
There might be 5 or 6 people that really want this to happen, but it doesn't happen. So you're seeing a lot more partnerships with new entrants with each other. I mean, I think that needs to change.
So I was in a panel the other day, and this exact point came up, and it, you know, was a a bank there that said exactly what you just said. And I said, well, let's step back from this and look at the logistics of actually doing a partnership with a bank. So if I'm a fintech and I come into you today and I want to do a partnership with you, the first thing I do is I hit procurement. Procurement gives me an 80-page contract.
Yep.
They've repurposed from Oracle. And they say to my six staff startup, my six employee startup, here you go, check out this contract, and we'll negotiate on this over the next 9 months, and see if we want to work with you. And then, so that's procurement. Then the legal guys have to be involved. The risk guys are involved. You have to have the CTO or the technology team sign off on the tech. You have to have a business sponsor. You have to have the chief digital officer, if there's one, actually be involved in the process as well. So you've got all these different stakeholders, no one's coordinating this.
Yeah, and all it takes is one person to say no.
Exactly. Yeah. And then the whole thing. And in the meantime, this small fintech that you're supposed to be collaborating with, you're essentially starving them of revenue, because you're engaging them in this extended sales process because of the chaos internally. When the number one thing you should use them for is their technology. And you're involving them in account management and legal and all of these other things, which, frankly, they probably don't have the resources for at all.
I mean, there's two things. I mean, banks don't develop products the way startups do.
Right.
You know, the number of banks I've heard say, you know, they haven't brought in a turnkey solution that will work for us on day one.
Right.
And I'm like, that's not how the product gets developed. But the other
issue... Because if they did do that, then they wouldn't be fintechs, right?
Exactly. But there's another issue that I know that, you know, just having HSBC on your deck looks great. But I always advise fintechs to go for like the building societies.
Yeah.
Because they're smaller, you know, they are closer to the customer. And also in terms of like what's going on with open banking, you know, the Monzos and the Starlings aren't actually bound by the CMA directive and the PSD2. They're not one of the nine banks. But if I wanted to sit on a marketplace, you go to Starling,
because
they have that all set up. That's going to be a much easier road than going for the large incumbents.
Yeah, absolutely. What are there any other conversations that you think we shouldn't be having now, or we should be having?
Well, there's London is, I always say London's the capital of fintech. It's the global capital of fintech, but there is a maturity happening.
You don't think China's the global head of fintech?
In a different way.
Okay. So the head of Westernized fintech.
Well, see, I don't think China's...
Like the biggest challenger bank in the world is in China, WeBank. Mobile payments.
But that works in China. Okay. I think it's kind of naive to think that China's huge. They're
Ali
a massive
plays in 100
force.
Countries.
I don't think that what necessarily is dominant in China is going to be dominant over here with the social currency issues going on that will not wash with politics in Western countries.
Well, we can agree to disagree.
but there is like a maturity with fintech.
Yeah.
Where I think we're entering a very cynical age. We are getting a lot of people saying no one's going to switch to Monzo. You know, we are getting people saying, what's the point of doing these partnerships? They don't work anyway. We're at that sort of, I don't like that hill that gets published, but there is some sort of trough of disillusionment.
The trough of disillusionment.
We're in right at the moment. And I'd like to see, because in my mind, fintech is just about making banking better. I don't care who does it. I really don't. And you need to. We need to focus on that instead of all these rivals.
I agree.
I mean, just a little bit about switching. This is what bothers me about switching. It is statistically, you're more likely to stay with your bank than with your spouse.
Well,
but I disagree with this. So right. That's
but
the statistic.
You stay.
Yeah.
But you're not using the account.
No, I know. But so this is where I get angry at the people who say, oh, no one's going to switch their bank. The banks have the loyalty, you know, and they do have scale, they do have loyalty. But, you know, when I moved to this country, the UK, 22 years ago, I could not get a high street bank to give me a bank account at all. right? It took, and even like my traditional bank I work with, sometimes there's all these little things you got to jump up the hoops. I opened up a Starling account and it took 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So when my son, who's 14, starts working, I'm not opening up him up a traditional bank account. I'm opening up a Monzo or a Starling. That's where the switch is going to come. And
you
it's going to come
very
quickly.
You know what my kids
quickly.
Have, right?
What do they have?
They have moving accounts.
Of course. You have to keep it in the family.
No. This is what, that conversation gets repeated so often. And I say to people, but look, all you need to do is look at the activity on the account. So what happens is someone starts off, they're here in the UK, they're a HSBC Lloyds customer, whatever, and they try out Starling or Monzo, right? So what happens is they might move a little bit of spend over and then they like it. So they move all of their discretionary spend over, but it's too hard to change all the direct debit billing stuff. Yeah. Their mortgage still comes out of the main account. And so they leave all that stuff in their primary account. Salary goes in, they take discretionary budget out to Starling and Monzo. Mm. And so they're spending day to day on the Challenger Bank.
Yeah.
2 years in, they're like, you know what?
I'm
not getting any value out of my old bank. So they move all their direct debit stuff over. But it's too hard to close the bank account because you got to go down the branch and do all this stuff. And so they just say, oh, I can't be bothered with that. And so they just leave a little bit of cash in there. It gets eroded by fees over time. But they don't technically close the account. So, if you're a HSBC, you say, we've still got him as a customer. He hasn't switched. But he has, right?
Yeah.
He or she, they've moved their activity over.
Well, there are certain challenger banks that count, an email database as a customer. I won't name them.
I understand. In fact, there are also, we know from a fact with Moovin in terms of comparables, we have correlated for some of them that downloads of the app is customers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And yet, that's not an active customer. Surely they don't have a card. They might have downloaded the app, but they may not have even completed the sign-up process. So there's a lot of interesting numbers out there. But you know what? At the same time, I think it is a little bit, Twitter can count a user as someone who, has an at handle. You don't even have to have the Twitter app to be counted as a customer for them.
Yeah.
Then you've got active users, which is a different mechanism. So I think maybe there might be some nuance of that over time. Mm. But you're right. I mean, if the banks can report a customer that doesn't have any bank balance in their account, then why can't the fintechs, right? Mm-hmm. What else is happening for you here in the UK, Liz?
Right now, my whole life is fintech talents. So we're doing a third day, which is focused just on AI and reg tech as well.
Because you've been heavily involved in the conversation of fintech for a long time. But you're now, you're saying you're getting more on the event side, right?
Well, I've done events for a long time, but it's part of that conversation.
Yeah.
I think people, even though we live in a digital world, everyone likes to sit down and talk to each other. So I take a lot of put a lot of stock in physical meetings and physical. So I kind of like looking at communication as like this multi-sided 3D device. There's print, there's digital, there's online conversations, there's in-person conversations. It's all that experience that you put together in one big package.
Okay, so now here's the tough question for you, the big question.
You told me only softballs.
Yeah, but you opened this can of worms yourself, right? So for the first time, actually this month, we've just seen that investment in fintech in London has superseded investment in fintech in Silicon Alley, which is New York, and Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And so London has always done quite well with the number of employees in fintech.
Yeah.
And so now investment is matching that. But there's sort of an unspoken issue here, which is Brexit may starve us of talent because it's really primarily around immigration.
Yeah.
So what happens after Brexit? We don't yet have an immigration plan.
Stop
for
swearing, Brett, please.
bringing talent in under this new arrangement. So how's that going to affect the growth of fintech, do you think?
So Okay, this is going to be my spin answer. London's been a global trading capital for centuries.
Of course.
Okay, the EU has been a membership organization for 40 years. London will survive this. It's a gateway city in ways that as wonderful as Amsterdam and Berlin and Dublin are, just aren't. So people will always want to come to London somehow. I mean, I didn't come to live in the UK through a freedom of movement. You know,
right.
I had to apply,
yeah.
And that's not me. Not, you know, trust me. I voted to stay. This is a complete circus we're going through right now. But yeah, this is a bump that I think London will survive. People will always want to come here and work. And as you just mentioned, you opened the question with investment. People are attracted to money. You know, if this is where. This is where the money is. This is where you're going to find the people that have that those funds and that capital.
Yeah,
they're going to come.
Yeah. Well, let's hope it doesn't. You know, it may be that the mayor of London steps up and does something for London.
We have like
City.
A free zone. Like
yeah,
a
yeah, it's good enough for Dubai.
Yeah,
you know,
Singapore.
Then, yeah, and Singapore. So, well, Liz Lumley, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you so much.
How do people follow FinTech Talents and what you guys are doing?
So, our Twitter handle is at FinTech Talents.
Yep.
We've got social media cards everywhere. You can follow me at Liz Lum.
Yep.
So again, it's November 11th, 12th, 13th at Printworks in London. So it's the former printing and distribution warehouse for the Evening Standard.
Correct.
So we're built on the ashes of another industry destroyed by digital disruption.
Did you see the New York Times head came out today and said he expects the UK newspapers to go under because they're still too reliant on print? Did you see that?
Mm.
Yeah. Anyway,
oh, well,
that's another conversation.
Issue.
Liz Lumley, thanks for stopping
Thank
by.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so Christine Parker is with us right now. We're at the Breaking Banks booth at Cybos, and Christine is with a longtime supporter and sponsor of the Breaking Banks show, Pegasystems. And Christine, you're based in Cambridge, Massachusetts, right?
That's correct. Cambridge, Massachusetts.
I never know how to say that, Massachusetts. actually, it'd sort of be interesting. It's a tangent, but it'd be interesting to know where the name of the state came from, what its derivation was.
It's
an unusual word. Is it like, is it a Native American
origin? You know, that's a good question. I guess living there, I should know that.
Yeah, that's okay.
That's homework.
You can get back to us on that. All right. So what's Pega doing at the Cybos show this week?
Well, so far we've had a great week at Cybos. A lot of activity around our core offerings in artificial intelligence and machine learning, real-time digital process automation,
yep.
and workflow management, and of course across our business applications around customer service and KYC and onboarding. So we've had a lot of activity so far this week and really aligning to so many themes here at Cybos this
yeah.
year.
No, certainly it's sort of a consistent theme, isn't it? The AI and so forth.
Absolutely.
You've obviously had a pretty busy week. What's your schedule been like?
Oh, my goodness. Well, of course, being here with you, which is fantastic,
yep.
and been on a series of panels around automated payments, use of AI, as well as moderating panels around payments and also Swift, GPI, and GCase capabilities.
So is this mainly for you guys a networking event to meet with your customers, or you're actually doing business here, new business?
We are doing all of the above.
All of the above.
We've had over 150 meetings, or we've had over meetings with 150 different clients. We've showed a series of our demos and our capabilities at our booth, and also, of course, networked, which is part and parcel of these conferences.
Yeah, I think, a lot of the Cybos activity happens at bars and restaurants after the main event, and it's the same for many of the other events around the world. Now, of course, Pega has a range of solutions, core, middleware, in the cloud and so forth. But specifically, what are some of the areas where you see banks struggling on the digital transformation path where you guys are actively working to assist them?
Well, it's a great question. And I think in part it depends on the financial institution, right?
Of course.
But there are kind of a top selection in that area. And I would say, first on the regulatory and compliance piece,
yep.
KYC, onboarding, shrinking yep. those cycles, ensuring especially global and regional regulation along those lines, which we help a lot of clients
with.
You
know my joke about KYC, don't you?
What's that?
It stands for kill your customers with paperwork. Sorry.
Well, we try to take that pain out of
right,
that
exactly,
process.
Right, exactly.
And we do so successfully. And then the other pieces... are around...
you do a lot of workflow management.
Workflow management. We do a lot of workflow management, as well as connecting end-to-end processes.
Right.
And really doing
so... Gluing it together.
Exactly. Yeah. And we do so between our AI, natural language processing, and machine learning capabilities, as well as our automation capabilities.
Right. So we had, I can't remember her name now, Ms. Kosler last year talking about that. But in the last 12 months, what progress have you made on NLP, you know, voice-based natural language processing stuff? In terms of the system stuff?
Well, we've actually made more advances in terms of being able to make that part of our broader platform and
okay.
application
base. So it's become more integrated, isn't it?
Absolutely, okay. Especially within, and not just within, especially within our customer service
yeah.
and also our capabilities in investigations as yes. well. Yes.
Now, on the AI side, are you guys also involved in robotic process automation? Is that
yes.
part of it?
Yes, that actually is the roots of Pega. We were
right.
founded 35 years ago
okay,
very much in that robotics and DPA space. So it's really the foundation of our business.
That's
and,
cool.
And in the past 8 or 10 years, we've added the AI and machine learning along with that,
right.
Which gives us a fantastic platform for banking digital transformation.
Yeah, absolutely. So you head up Global Financial Services, am I correct, for
yes,
Pega?
Yes, I do.
So what does that involve? You know, how much time do you spend traveling? Where, you know, how far afield do you go?
Yeah. Well, it is a global role, which I'm very excited about. And I spend about 40% of my time with clients,
yep.
Helping understand their issues, understand how we can help them in the most effective manner with our solutions. And then,
so some are U.S. based, but
yes,
there's
we
also
have a bulk of our business is in North America and the
yep.
Americas, and then okay, of course the U.K.
Yep.
The Nordics is a fantastic market for
right.
us, as well as Asia Pac.
Okay,
but we serve over 160 countries.
What's your favorite place to go?
Oh my gosh!
Well, I get asked this all the yeah. time, so it's now my turn to ask someone else.
I do love London.
Yep.
In the UK, but I love the Nordics.
Yeah.
I just do. I think it's so beautiful there.
They're pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pun intended.
Yeah. No.
All right.
In the warmer months.
Yep. And so, is there anything specific you guys have launched at Sibos this year?
Actually, we have launched two related items.
Yep.
We have launched... a new version, a new capability of our investigation, our smart investigation application, which
so
already,
what does that do?
Well, it actually is a payments investigation engine.
So anti-fraud, AML.
Correct. Any exceptions that you
right.
might get where a payment is not being able to be applied, or there's something wrong in the process
right.
that's stopping it from going through seamlessly.
Hmm.
So we have the ability to detect that, help management, help get all the right parties obviously coordinated around it through a series of our underlying technologies of AI machine learning, but also we've already integrated the Swift GPI standards into this, as we were one of the three in the pilot earlier this year. So we're very excited about that, and we're looking forward to doing more work on the roadmap of what Swift has in mind,
yes.
what we can do in the ISO 022 standards as well.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. And the second thing is that we've enhanced what we're calling our intelligent service platform.
Mm.
So really that end-to-end platform that connects and helps accelerate a cycle of a service issue, helping with proactive service notifications, with watching and listening to what's going on throughout the transactional movement, for a client, but also bridging it to the front office to understand when something's hitting an alert level that they may or may not may be able to help with or want to be alarmed with. And then also helping them understand and being able to have more relevant and contextual conversations by having greater insights with what's going on with the client so that they can help with next best offers, next best actions that are very tailored for their client.
Okay, cool. So sounds like you guys are making some good progress. So when are you heading back to Cambridge?
This evening.
Very good. And well, you get in very late or you get in early?
Get around 7:30 and it'll be what about 1 o'clock anyway, London time.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I'll be headed to sleep early tonight.
All right. Well, safe travels. Thanks for dropping past and giving us some valuable time before you have to rush off to the airport. And Christine Parker, one final thing: how do we find out more about Pegasystems and your solution set in the financial services space?
Well, for the remainder of Sibos, please come visit us at booth D121, or please visit us at pega.com.
Great. Thank you very much for dropping by.
Thank you, Brett.
Thank you for joining us on Breaking Banks this week. It was a crazy week out at London this week for Sibos. But, you know, many of our fintech friends were here. If they weren't here, they were probably in New York. Here in London, we had Chris Skinner, Dave Birch, all the fintech mafia gang. We had a great time working together, but I'm probably going to sleep for a week when I do eventually get home to New York on Friday night. Don't forget, number one podcast and radio show in the world, but that's only because you guys tell other people about us. You give us those 5-star ratings on iTunes. You tweet us out. Please keep doing that. We really appreciate your support. Thanks again. And don't forget, you can go to breakingbanks.com or provoke.fm and check out our back catalog. Thank you very much. See you again next week on Breaking Banks.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time for more of the latest in fintech news.